On 1st of December, Pemberton Greenish and Cripps formally completed their merger. Shortly before the big day, I met with Kerry Glanville, former senior partner at Pemberton Greenish and partner at the new firm, about her hopes for the merger and her impressive career. Hello, Kerry, and thanks for joining us today.
Hello, Jess. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, we're speaking just a few days before the merger of your firm, Pemberton Greenish, and Cripps becomes official. So how has that process been going so far?
Well, given the huge amount of work involved, it's proceeding remarkably smoothly, although not necessarily at a great pace. Effectively, it's taken approximately 18 months or so to get to this point from when we first began our discussions. We're currently working through a very detailed and lengthy integration plan. And the purpose of that plan, of course, is not just to merge our businesses seamlessly together, but to ensure that the transition process is as smooth as possible and as seamless as possible for both clients and our colleagues.
And are you excited what it will mean for the future of Pemberton Greenish?
Yes, very excited indeed. The merger creates a platform from which we can explore more opportunities. For us, that means being able to provide our clients with services which complement our core strengths. And for Cripps, it means that they will be able to make use of an established London presence to service their clients, a substantial number of whom are already London-based.
So can you share any early details on how the two firms will combine in terms of their real estate offering?
Well, we'll have one of the country's strongest real estate practices and we'll be one of the leading advisors to the London estates and the estates in the southeast, alongside major UK house builders, developers and investors. All told, we'll comprise about 465 lawyers, of whom 66 are partners, and the combined real estate team will be 150 strong. Our respective property litigation teams already each enjoy a very good reputation, and to join them together will mean that we shall be quite a force in the market.
Hopefully so. And what particular benefits do you think your clients will see from the merger?
Well, obviously greater strength and depth in real estate with a range of services which complement real estate, such as property finance, tax, planning, construction, both contentious and non-contentious. And we think that operating in two locations will actually give us the flexibility that we are going to need to service our clients' needs going forward.
Now, of course, this is the latest in a number of high-profile law firm mergers that we've seen in the last couple of years. Do you expect that kind of consolidation to continue in the sector as competition grows ever more fierce?
Yes, I do. I think the market is becoming increasingly tough for smaller firms, and that's not just to do with the economic climate. Clients' expectations are constantly rising. So businesses like ours have to be able to be nimble to anticipate and meet those needs and expectations, which means continued investment both in people and in technology. And that's a great challenge for smaller firms. On top of that, there's a huge amount of time needed now to comply with an increasingly complex regulatory environment, and that mops up both time and resources.
So moving on to look at your own career, you have particular expertise in landlord and tenant work. As we look ahead to 2019, what do you think the major battlegrounds will be in that arena?
I think they'll be around commercial rather than residential property. As I'm sure you know, there are a number of consultations going on at the moment around the future of leasehold as a form of tenure for residential property, as well as root and branch reform of the enfranchisement legislation. As a result of that activity on the residential side, we think people are waiting to see what will emerge from the consultations, and that therefore the focus in the short term will switch to commercial property, where the retail sector is facing quite a tough time. Mm-hmm. We're noticing quite a lot of work around the high street generally, and I think clients will be looking to their lawyers to come up with and implement creative solutions mm-hmm. to keep tenants in their premises and trading. Issues around insolvency and the use of CVAs are becoming increasingly common, as is the appetite to challenge them.
And what challenges do you think that practitioners will face or continue to face in that period?
Well, I think continued is right, because they will be the perennial ones. There will continue to be pressure on fees for those who are actively involved in litigation. The court system will continue to be a huge source of frustration.
I'm sure it will, and we hear that an awful lot. Now, you've enjoyed considerable success in your field and received the prestigious accolade of being entered into the Legal 500 Hall of Fame, which highlights individuals who have received constant praise by their clients for continued excellence. You spoke to them about your background, describing yourself as someone unlikely to have been identified when you were a child as likely to achieve this honour. Would you say your path to the law was an unusual one?
Well, my actual route into the law was entirely conventional. I went straight from school to university, where I did a law degree. I went from there to do my Law Society finals at law school, and then on to work as an article clerk. I qualified into property litigation, and I've been doing property litigation since then. So far, so conventional. But I think it was getting onto that path that was perhaps not as inevitable. My parents were very supportive of me when I was at school, but I don't think they ever really thought that I would go on to university and join the job market as a graduate.
And sorry, Kerry, what part of the country is it you hail from?
I come from Cardiff.
Right, okay. Are you an advocate of seeking a greater diversity of experience and background in the legal profession?
Yes, indeed I am. I think the profession needs to reflect the diversity of its clients, and we still have quite some way to go in this regard, but I do think that the new alternative career paths into the law will help with this process.
You became the first female senior partner of Pemberton Greenish back in 2017, and at the time you named Baroness Hale of Richmond as the person in the legal profession who inspires you the most, citing a career which has taken her to the very top, littered with firsts for women in the English legal profession. In terms of gender diversity, how would you grade the real estate legal profession as things stand, and how much work do you still think there needs to be done?
Well, there's always more work to be done, but actually I think there is greater diversity in the real estate sector of the profession than in many, if not most, others, particularly in real estate dispute resolution. Women make up comfortably more than half of the PLA membership currently. I think the real problem is that gender diversity reduces with seniority. We seem to be able to attract highly talented females, but we aren't as good as we should be in retaining them. This isn't just a problem for the legal profession or any particular sector of it, but we do need to develop strategies to deal with it.
In your Hall of Fame interview, you also described yourself as quite direct. Is that a quality that clients appreciate?
Yes. Clients come to us to seek advice, and while they may appreciate being told of the various options available to them, they really want to be given a proper steer on what they should do. I try to give an honest appraisal of the merits of pursuing a particular course, and if a case isn't very strong, I don't hesitate to say so.
Fair enough. Now, you mentioned the PLA, the Property Litigation Association, and you are actively involved with that association. In fact, you've just begun your year as deputy chair, is that right?
That's correct.
And you're working with the PLA's new chair, Brian Johnston. How important to you is your work with the PLA, and why do you think it's a valuable organisation?
Well, I've been an active member of the PLA for well over 20 years. I think it's played a very important role in establishing property litigation as a specialism in its own right. It brings practitioners together for educational as well as social purposes, and the fact that it continues to grow is really a testament to both its relevance and its value.
And do you think the PLA can help meet those sort of challenges of diversity of background and gender diversity that we talked about?
Yes, I think it can. We lead by example, and as I've said, more than half of our membership are female, and they play a much more active role, as it happens, than our male counterparts across all of the committees.
Speaking of active roles, are you already sort of beginning to think ahead to a year's time? That these 12 months can fly by very quickly. So are you thinking ahead to when you will take over as chair?
Well, yes, indeed. 12 months is a short period of time and it will whiz by. I think, like all of us who sit on the PLA committees, we're thinking ahead and planning for the future. We're trying to anticipate the challenges that our members will face and our clients as well, and trying to address those. We're trying to access those people who are in a position to influence change, and all in the best interests of property litigation generally and the service that we're able to provide. In his inaugural speech at the PLA's annual dinner last week, Brian Johnston referred to agitating for change. As the former chair of the Law Reform Subcommittee, that is a strategy that I strongly support, and I will take that forward when my turn comes to mm-hmm. chair the PLA.
And one of those challenges that affects practitioners and clients both that you mentioned earlier on is the state of the courts and the tribunal service. And that's one thing that the PLA is heavily involved in, is the evolution of that service. In fact, we are anticipating an article from the PLA on that topic very soon. But since you're here, we wondered what your thoughts are on the current consultation on a specialist housing court that would deal with residential matters.
Well, I think it's a good idea in principle, but I'm afraid that unless it's properly resourced, it will not represent the improvement on the present system that we were hoping for. To be honest, I think it's too early to pass judgment on this, but we are monitoring the effectiveness of the housing court and how business is dealt with and its efficiency.
And no doubt the PLA are playing an active role in that consultation.
Indeed we are.
On a similar theme, how has your experience been with the business and property court? Has it made much of a difference so far?
Well, unfortunately, this has amounted to no more than a change of name, a rebrand, which continues to operate much as it did before. I don't think I can point to any specific change in the way it actually works. The judiciary is fine when you get before a judge. The quality of decision making is good, but the time it takes to get before a judge is disgraceful, and the administration of claims continues to be nothing short of woeful.
So, okay. Woeful, that's a damning assessment. So let's try a little blue sky thinking. If someone put you in charge of overhauling the court system, what changes would you like to see?
Well, I don't know whether it qualifies as blue sky thinking. It seems basic and fundamental to me. But until we have a system that can be administered wholly online, I would reinstate the old-fashioned counter service, so you can physically turn up with your papers, lodge them, and have a certificate confirming that you've done so. We can't be responsible for what happens to those papers when they disappear, but we should be able to prove that we've lodged them in due time. And the current system is not good at dealing with paperwork, which often gets mislaid, lost, defaced. It's not good. And I think we need a counter service. We also need somebody who'll answer the phone, somebody with a bit of experience who might actually be able to deal promptly with a query. Until we get more resources and people are able to develop careers at the court service so they gain experience, which means that they are able effectively to deal with court users, the system isn't going to get any better. As I say, I don't think that's groundbreaking stuff. It's not blue sky thinking necessarily, but it would make a huge difference to court users, and it's something that the HMCTS seem to be most resistant to.
It all comes down to resources and funding.
It does.
Yeah. So is there anything else about the legal side of things that you hoped we would ask but we haven't?
I thought you might ask about the consultations going on the revolution regarding leasehold enfranchisement.
Yes, I suppose so. Yeah, I guess we've had a lot of coverage of that in the magazine itself. But no, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on that while you're here.
Well, I was quite surprised that they were going to be so radical when the Law Commission asked for suggestions for its 13th programme. I did write in and say they ought to take a blank piece of paper and start again with it. And I was absolutely amazed when it seems that they're going to do just that. Mm. So we are having, as you're aware, very much high-level involvement in that consultation. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of it.
Lastly, we should inquire a little about what you get up to when you're not working. There can't be very much time left in your schedule for that, but I believe from previous interviews that you have some quite unusual leisure pursuits that take you back to Wales even.
Well, on a more mundane level, I enjoy gardening, so a large part of my time when I'm not working is spent out in my garden. I enjoy being outdoors, and associated with that is keeping bees, which has given a huge amount of pleasure and never ceases to fascinate me. Every season and every year is different. The amount of honey we produce is different.
So how many bees?
How many bees?
Roughly. I don't. Not hoping for an exact number.
Well, we have five hives and about at their peak, 40,000 bees in each. So you can do the maths.
Yeah.
But I also keep Highland cattle at our house in Pembrokeshire.
And how many
cats? We have five. They're basically pets, but they're very interesting.
Fascinating. Right, thank you very much for being here today, Kerry, and best of luck with your year as deputy chair and, of course, with the merger.
Thank you very much.